You're listening to the best of Talkin' Sports with Byron, an on-demand audio presentation of RedPeachSports.com and ESPN977.com.
Thunder, baby, I'm bringing it today. Good afternoon, John Tabor.
How goes
it? It's going. I will not bring you into this conversation other than to say thank you, but I'm not in a good mood, people. I need to get there. This is the best job a man could have, but I was running late getting here today because I was watching for the first time the movie Benghazi. Shouldn't have done that, probably. But not in a real good mood, so let's get there. I'm B. Byron Avery, your host. DJ is out today. He is emceeing at the Fun Row Fest. A lot of stuff going on at the Civic Center. He is over there emceeing at one of the concert stages. He'll probably check in with us at some point today just to let us know what's going on. But I'm flying solo again today. We've got a great lineup for you. We're going to have Zach Green in a little bit from Car King. Brett Hudson is going to come on from the New Star again. We're going to talk about whatever the heck happened with the LHSAA. We're also going to have Ruston High School principal Ricky Durrett come on, one of the authors of what I had hoped would be the passing legislation, so to speak, in the LHSAA this week. We're going to talk with Sean Williams, our buddy from ProFootballSpot.com, and Houdat Nation Redemption, his latest offering on Legends of the Fall, Will Smith, and we'll talk about a little birthday with Sean today. Our What's Up segment. You remember him from West Monroe High School, from Washita High School, from Notre Dame, from Louisiana Tech. Larry Wright, he'll join us today at 1:15, and we're going to wrap up the show with Two Dudes Radio, Chris Brown and Kevo. Two Dudes Radio and Two Dudes Catering, we're going to find out what's going on with those guys, and we're going to pull this show out today. I got to get in a better mood, and here's what will put you in a better mood. More baseball, college baseball tonight. First pitch, I believe, is at 8 o'clock. LSU in the Super Regional versus the Chanticleers of Coastal Carolina right here on ESPN 97.7 FM. We're waiting to get in touch with Zach Green to start the show off, but we're going to have a great show for you. We want to thank our sponsors. We've been really pressed the last couple of weeks. Great Louisiana Tech baseball on the radio. And so we've had to cut our show short, which is no problem for those guys. They had a great, great run, 42 I believe, and 20 on the season. Coach Goff and the Bulldogs, great year. We've still got some ULM and Tech Track going on. Those guys in the Nationals. So a lot of good going there. Just want to reach back out and hit our partners we've missed out on a little bit this week. Of course, Car King and Pulpit Producers with our Car King Hotline and Pulpit Producers text line, 888-993-7762. The Glassworks of West Monroe Twitter feed, at TSports977FM. And we're going to go right now to the Car King Hotline, and we're joined by Zach. Zach, welcome back to the program.
Hey, guys. How's it going today?
It's going. It's going. Good day to buy cars today?
Man, every day is a good day to buy cars, but today is a great day to buy cars.
Okay.
Tell
us what's hot.
Absolutely. We have a 2015 Toyota Camry with 6,000 miles, full factory warranty, $19,995 or $315 a month. Also, another 2015 Camry with 22,000 miles, still under factory warranty, $18,995 or $299 a month. And for you guys looking for a four-wheel drive truck, we have a 2013 Chevrolet Crew Cab Z71 4x4. 50,000 miles, LT, black in color with leather, $27,995 or $415 a month.
Good.
And that's
what kind of lot. Deals. Those are some deals. So what do you have planned for after work today?
Just going to go home and relax, man, cook a little dinner, enjoy a little time with the wife, and that's it. Get ready for the work day on Monday.
Absolutely. All right, well, I appreciate you, and have a great rest of the weekend, Zach.
You too, guys. Appreciate y'all.
Y'all go see Zach Green at Car King on Louisville Avenue, and he's got what's hot. We're 5 minutes into the show, and I'm still fired up. So, John Tabor, I do want to ask you a question. On the way in, you know, I'm listening to the trifecta, and I've had my issues with the trifecta before, the ESPNW. I don't have a problem with women's sports reporters. That's not it at all. You know, I don't want to turn on, I've said this before, I'm getting into my political stuff here, I'm trying to stay away from the other political stuff. I don't want to turn on ESPN radio and hear about gay rights issues and all that. That's just, you know, for whatever that is, that's not what I want to listen to on sports radio. So at first they were talking about the game, the Cavaliers and the Warriors. And I didn't even, it didn't even cross my mind that I'm listening to women reporters because they're talking basketball. And that's fine. I mean, again, knowledgeable is what I'm looking for. And they're knowledgeable. Sarah Spain and Jane McManus, they were great. And they were offering great analogy. And I'm telling you, LeBron James supposedly admitted after the game that when Draymond Green called him the B word, it was the maddest he's ever been on a basketball court. John, you played sports, right?
I did. Played youth league and then some into high school, okay. Yes.
Well, right. I mean, but I mean, you know, guys, we're out there, you're playing, you're getting hit. It, you know, sports are contact. For the most part, they're contact sports. I mean, you're getting pushed around, you're getting elbowed, you're getting kneed. You're getting hit in places you shouldn't get hit. You're getting called names. Is that new? That's not new information. You know, guys, I haven't heard of anyone taking a shot to the nards that has made them sterile because we got plenty of, you know, basketball players' kids running around everywhere. I don't think Draymond Green is this villain. You know, this is nothing new. And I heard the ladies today talking about Michael Jordan and the difference between Michael Jordan and LeBron James being the mental toughness. LeBron is a great basketball player. He is great. Physical tools. If Michael had a bad night, Michael still knew how to carry the team, still knew how to find the open guy, play the defense, push people. You know, they were saying, you know, he didn't have all this social media stuff. LeBron James doesn't have to be on social media. He could ignore it. He could do a number of things and just go play basketball and focus on his guys. He's got the team he built. John Tabor, would you agree with that?
Yes, and you said something very specific, the team he built.
Right,
keep in mind
exactly.
That when he came back to Cleveland, you know, he had his little, you know, I'm coming back, and he never mentioned anything about Andrew Wiggins, and, you know, thought process has kind of been he was – part of the push to bring in Kevin Love, which I personally did not like that move then and definitely don't like the move now. I believe that Kyrie and Andrew Wiggins could have been one heck of a backcourt for the next 10 to 12 years. Be that as
Absolutely.
It may, to your point, you know, he's had a very, you know, 99% of it behind the scenes, behind closed doors where it should be, influence upon the management of the team. And I can't really say that I have a huge problem with that. But, you know, this is the girl you chose. Now you've got to dance with her.
Absolutely. And complaints.
And I think the girl over in Oakland is just a little bit better looking.
Absolutely. She's got a lot more going for her, I can tell you that. Another comment that they made on that show this morning as I was coming in was someone saying that the Bulls didn't have to play anyone like the Warriors. Well, of course not. They played tough teams. And I'm not saying the Warriors are wusses or anything. I'm just saying it's not the same. It's not the same game. You can't. It's an era. I'm tired of the LeBron, Michael Jordan, you know, Dwight Howard, Bill Russell. You can't compare any of these guys.
To your point, here's something for you. The 1987 Finals, 11 combined made three-pointers between both teams. It was a different game.
17 made by the Warriors last night, correct?
That, I don't know for sure, but that sounds about right.
I think that's what
close
it was.
Enough here, to make your point.
Yeah, and here's another thing I'm going to tell you. This is a little bit off. This has nothing to do with the players. But I'm listening to the pregame last night on ESPN Radio, and I can't remember who else it was, but it was John Barry. He was sitting in for somebody. And his prediction, Warriors win by 9. They won by 11. The He said that Steph and Clay, they had been averaging 28 points. He said they would hit 28 combined points. Well, they were averaging 28 combined points for the first through the first three games. He said they would have more than 28 at halftime. They did. They were doing an over-under. So over-under on both of them at 28. He said both. He said they would combine for 20 more than 28 by half. They did. He said Steph would have more than 28. Clay would have less than 28 for the game. He was correct. And he did say that LeBron would shoot less than 50% because he thought he would have to shoot 30 times. Well, he only shot 21 times, and he was 57%. So, but I'm going to tell you what, for those first three games and for John Barry to come out before the game and say that the Warriors would win by 9 and they won by 11, that's pretty amazing. I hope he buys a lottery ticket for the weekend. But we're going to go ahead and take our first break. Just in case I didn't mention it, you're listening to Talkin' Sports. I'm your host today, flying solo, B, Byron Avery. I want you to join us for the rest of the show, but we're going to take a break right now. You're listening to us on ESPN 97.7 FM. Welcome back to the program. Talkin' Sports, ESPN 97.7 FM. Today it's just you and me, and I'm B, Byron Avery, your host. DJ is out at Fun Row Fest doing his motivational thing. This hour brought to you by Gina Eubanks Allstate Insurance in Ruston and Minden. Gina Eubanks, agency owner since 1995. We are presented by DBAT of Monroe. DBAT for all your baseball and softball training needs. DBATMonroe.com. On the Car King Hotline, joining us again this week is Brett Hudson of the New Star. Brett, thanks for joining us again today.
Anytime, Byron. Thanks for having me.
Well, my big question this week after the vote was, what was the participation? And I spoke to Shelby Ainsworth, principal at West Monroe High School a couple days ago, and he said out of the, you know, I don't know the exact numbers, 400-whatever schools, there were more than 300 there. So I guess this is what they wanted. You know, the Todd Geis, I believe it was on with Nick and Aaron Wednesday morning and said that they had heard from so many people that they would have voted on another plan if they'd had the opportunity, but only one plan was presented, and so they had an opportunity Wednesday to vote on all plans, and we kept the status quo. What the heck happened?
Well, two things. One, I think it was a horribly faulty voting system. They did it all votes at once. So instead of the way it was at the convention where the entire body votes on each agenda item one at a time, they voted on the entire thing wholesale. So in theory, and it didn't go out this way, but in theory, you could have had 25% of the membership there vote for each of the four proposals on the board all at the same time. And then nothing passed. Of course, that percentage breakdown didn't come to fruition, but I think that principle more or less did come to fruition, which is that a faulty voting system kept people from really uniting behind any one proposal, and again, kept people being loyalist to their guy and not really coming together in some unity that the LHSAA desperately needs. I think that was one reason, and I think another is that there were two proposals that were very similar to each other that probably took some votes away from one another, almost in the vein of like a presidential race in which one candidate doesn't win the nomination but has such a loyal following that he ends up costing his party the nomination, or the presidency, excuse me, because of his loyal backing, not willing to jump on with the party's actual nominee. That being the two that would have proposed for a multiplier on select schools or schools that get a certain percentage of their student-athletes out of their LHSAA attendance zone. I think those two proposals being so close to one another and a horribly faulty voting system made this happen.
Yeah, well, excuse me. If I can remember Todd's comments correctly Wednesday morning, it was going to be, we're going to have five rounds of votes if needed. We're going to have the first round. Everybody's going to vote. If we don't get 50% on one of these, then we're going to go on to the next one. You know, so in my mind, it was, okay, here's proposal one. Everybody vote on it. If we don't get 50%, we're going to the next proposal. So that one failed. So I'm not sure if that's how it happened. What does this mean now? If the first comment is we have a lot of people saying they didn't really want this, but they didn't have an opportunity to vote on the other, what does this mean if it passed again? I mean, what, you know, does that mean that we're done?
Well, I think for the time being, this means that we are done. I mean, we surely don't have time to pass another playoff system before. I mean, we're not going to pass a new playoff system in January for next year's basketball, baseball, and softball season. So I would imagine we're almost certainly locked into the expansion of the select-non-select split for the 2016-2017 academic year. So that's what that means. And what it really means for the LHSAA is they have to get to planning with Lake Charles for basketball and Sulphur for baseball and softball and figure out what they're going to do for that influx of championships. I believe it means they're adding 5 championships in those realms. That's not an easy undertaking for those venues or for those cities. So I think that's the next step for the LHSAA. You have to do whatever you can to help Sulphur and Lake Charles prepare for this.
Well, and more of Todd, more comments from Todd Geis were along the lines of the NFL and the Superdome and the Saints are cooperating with us for these 2 weeks of championships, and it's not easy for them, so that may become an issue. Sponsorship money, a lot of sponsors are on hold waiting to see what happens to the tune of, I believe he said, close to $500,000 in sponsorship revenue. I'm just trying to figure out how all this fits in, you know, because, you know, my theory won't fly. My philosophy of let them all play and, you know, if you're not good enough, you get beat. That won't fly because, you know, there is an unfair advantage. I still believe they're all recruiting, but there is an unfair advantage with the select schools because, you know, they can draw from anywhere and they may have better funding and all of this kind of stuff, you know. So I get that and I understand it and I go along with it. But at some point, and I spoke with several principals this week, and I will have Ricky Durrett on following you. But I spoke to several different principals, and I did have one say that they want to keep, and it wasn't in a vengeful way, but they want to keep the John Arretts, John Curtises, the Evangels. They want to keep them down. And that's only meant in they don't want the big stud athletes to go there thinking they can just get recruited in whatever fashion and just move on up and play up because of their recruiting ability. Does that make sense to you? Have you heard that?
Yeah, I mean, I would go back to echo your previous point that I think a lot of non-select schools recruit talent also. And, you know, there are several geographic advantages that public schools have that a lot of people don't realize. For example, Ruston, I believe, is the only football-playing school in that parish as opposed to Cedar Creek, or with the exception being Cedar Creek. So I believe they're the only public football-playing school in that parish. So, yes, but there's much fewer options for public school football in Lincoln Parish than there are in Ouachita Parish, for example. Right. So that I think that plays into Ruston's favor, and I believe Manny is in a very similar situation where they're one of very few football-playing schools in their parish, and they get an advantage that way. So I think at some point people have to realize that there is no perfect system for high school sports. We just have to find a compromise which people can unify with one another. And we obviously haven't found that yet, or else we wouldn't be covering conventions and special sessions every 2 or 3 months.
Right. Now, I almost don't even know where to go with this, Brett, but let's sidestep for just a second. And because of what happened, the Class B and Class C situation never became an issue this week. So my understanding is Class B and Class C continue as they have been, correct?
That is correct.
Okay. So no combination there. And I did speak to another person and said that the the B and C schools were, for the most part, from what they understood, unhappy with that proposal because they're such smaller classes that, you know, if you're a B school or a C school, you got like a 1 in 35 chance of winning a state championship. But you combine them, now you got a 1 in 70 chance just to use those round numbers. So you're lessening your chance of being a state champion, obviously. But they like their separation in Class B and Class C, and you can understand why, correct?
Oh, absolutely. And, I mean, I don't think it was necessarily in the mass of the possibility of winning a state championship. I think it was the principle of the matter. You know, I think one of the biggest PR hits the LHSAA has taken in this selective madness is that it's created an inordinate amount of state championships. I don't think Louisiana is a state large enough to merit 9 football state championships when, for example, Alabama is much larger than Louisiana is, and they only have 7 football championships. So, I mean, if you look at it that way, it just doesn't really make sense for Louisiana to have 9 football state championships and then what we're going to have somewhere in the 12 to 13 range for basketball, baseball, and softball. I think that was one of the things the LHSAA had heard, and they found combining Class B and Class C to be a way to solve that, which is true, but it's also kind of a scapegoat in the eyes of the Class B and Class C schools, and they didn't appreciate being treated that way, and who could blame them?
Right, and I understand it, and I agree with it. I mean, and I think that's exactly what it was. That was a, you know, hey, look, we'll do this. You will increase this, but we'll sacrifice B and C, and we'll cut out a few state championships that way. That's not the way to go. And I did see, I thought it was funny, on the show Twitter feed, somebody said Louisiana is in I can't remember the direct quote here, but basically Louisiana is in the business now giving out participation trophies for high school championships.
Exactly. I completely agree.
Something has to be done. What are you going to do about it, Brett?
Just wait for the phone calls to come my way and wait for the next meeting, I guess. I can't do anything about it, unfortunately. I mean, several of my colleagues in the area, in the state, Robin Fambro, Warren Acrino, Amos Morales, Trey Labatt, they've all written columns. They've all kind of shaved the LHSAA in one way or another, and clearly nobody's listening to what we have to say, but that's not a surprise, is it?
It's not. It's not a surprise, but Robin Fambro is somebody I follow. I've known her for a long time. You guys just keep getting the information from the principal people, not necessarily the principals, but the principal people, keep putting those columns out there based on that correct information, and somebody's got to pay attention at some point. But let's turn to something a little better to end the segment with. Your St. Fred athlete, who's the Paul Martin Award winner?
Yes, right. Blair Breer, yeah, she's an excellent athlete in every regard. You know, what I found interesting about her is, you know, when you do these multi-sport athlete stories, they often revolve around people like that are football players and basketball players or basketball and track or things like that where they're in two sports where raw athleticism at the high school level more or less wins the day. But with her, it was soccer and tennis, two very complex, very individualistic skill sets that don't really mesh with one another. There's, yes, the footwork from soccer would translate to tennis, but there's nothing about dribbling the soccer ball that's going to help her mash a serve on the tennis court. So I found her to be especially impressive in that regard, that she's been able to master those two skill sets in two sports where most people specialize. Most people specialize in tennis year-round. Most people specialize in soccer year-round. But she found a way to do them both and do them at a high level. She was a very impressive girl.
Absolutely. And I just want to know where she gets what her quad workout is. That picture, those legs, I need that workout.
I know. She's a 17-year-old girl, and she's got stronger legs than I do as a grown man. I don't know what that says about me, but I'm not necessarily proud of it.
I'm telling you, I saw the picture. I was on my phone, and the picture I saw was just the legs, and I was like, "Who in the world is that?" And I could tell it was a female athlete, and then I read that it was the Martin Award winner and all that. And I'm just talking about the physical, you know. But it's just that's she's impressive. You know, my daughter plays tennis, and I know it can be tough, and I know you got to be a great athlete to play tennis. I've seen some pretty high level soccer, not the highest level, but some pretty high level college soccer. Those are great athletes. Plus, she did run track, which running track and playing tennis both in the spring, that can take its toll, and she was still a very successful athlete.
Absolutely, absolutely. I was floored when she told me she did both in the spring.
Yeah. And one thing we haven't gotten to was what came out in the paper last Sunday, the larger schools baseball awards. Can you talk about that for a minute?
Yeah, this was brutal. It was truly brutal. You know, Ruston made that unexpected run to the quarterfinals as the 26th seed in 5A. West Monroe, there's no denying the talent there. Wachita's got a ULL signee on their roster. And then go down to 4A. West Wachita obviously went to the state championship game. Neville gave them a great run in their playoff series, I believe in the second round. Franklin Parish was far from a pushover. And then in 3A, Union had one of the more underrated teams in 3A in the state, I thought. They got a tough matchup in the first round. That was still a good baseball team. So there's a lot of talent around here that had to be parsed down to a pretty small number of spots.
Yeah, and I did run into a couple of parents I know when I was out shopping this week. OCS is Maverick.
Maverick Wilhite,
going down to play at Southeastern.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I ran into him the other day at Smoothie King.
Yeah, he's a good kid. I've known him since he was a little baby. I know his parents real well, his grandparents, and Maverick's a good kid. And I worked down at Southeastern for a couple of years. I told him that they're going to love it down there. So, Brett, always a pleasure to have you on. Love your opinion. Keep plugging away, and we'll see if we can't get the LHSAA straightened out.
Well, maybe one day. Thanks for your time, Byron.
Tell us how to keep up with you.
Everything's at thenewstar.com.
All right, Brett, thanks again. We're going to go to break. You're listening to Talkin' Sports, ESPN 97.7 FM. Welcome back to the program, Talkin' Sports, ESPN 97.7 FM. It's just you and me today, and I'm B, Byron Avery, here with you on Talkin' Sports. DJ out at the Fun Row Fest. We're going to try to get him on the phone here to find out what all's going on over there. You know, we talked about it last week. We lost the champ, lost Ali, lost Gordie Howe, and you know, I'm a little bit older than some. I don't like revisionist history. I have to be careful what I say here because Ali was the man. Love him. Everything they say about him is true. He was a fighter. He was a winner, not just in the ring but out. He stood for people. The whole religion thing is an issue with me no matter what. But let's not forget. Yes, he converted. You feel free to say it was because of his beliefs. 99% of us didn't know him personally. But do remember that he converted when it was convenient to get out of going to Vietnam. Hey, I'd have probably done anything I could to get out of Vietnam as well. I hope I wouldn't, but you never know. Let's not forget that. Let's not do the revisionist history because that is when he converted. For whatever reason is his own, and what he did after that is commendable, and he changed lives, and he stood for what he believed in, not discrediting any of that. Let's just remember all these great, quote-unquote, great people in history weren't necessarily always great people. Ben Franklin included, all of our forefathers, they weren't perfect people. they were great people. Okay. That's done. For those of you texting me on my cell phone with those comments that can't be shared on the text line, thank you. Probably need a little bit more information than some of you are giving me. Thank you for that last one there, brother. Definitely don't send that one on the Pulpwood Producers text line. Yes, I am old, okay? I'm not as old as Kramer, though. No one. I think Kramer's older than his dad. So, anyway. Kramer might be the oldest person I know. So I can always fall back on that. Tabor, you know Kramer. Isn't he the oldest person you know?
Nah, Mark's not that bad.
Come on, Kramer. I'm telling you, Kramer's got to be older than his own dad, man. Okay, I think I'm starting to mellow a little bit today. But it's taken me a while. Okay, let's get back to the game. I wish this person texting me would call in. That way we could talk about something a little bit more sports-related than my age. But I'm sorry. Okay, but anyway, the game last night. So my tweet, as I'm a little early trying to get Mr. Principal Ricky Durrett on the phone. So my tweet, following game three that Cleveland won by 30 was, this win means nothing. And I was right. Cleveland went home, won by 30. Everybody expected it, or you should have. Did that make it a series? No, because once again, game four, still in Cleveland, they lose by 11. And they had their full roster, I guess you could say. I'm going to tell you one thing, John Tabor, though, I was impressed by in game three. I didn't even know Jefferson was still in the league. And the guy still has some hops. I mean, he could always jump out of the gym, but I couldn't believe he could still get up and touch the rim. What's he, like 55, 56? Good grief. I remember in the first 2 years when he broke into the league, he I believe he was playing for the Nets, and they went to the finals. I mean, the guy could, you know, just jump over everybody from the top of the key and dunk. So I guess if you can jump that high from the beginning. Okay, just got a text. Jefferson is older than Kramer. Wow. I guess if you can jump that high from the beginning, I guess, you know, you're even on your way down, you still got some hops. But this series is 3-1. John Tabor, is it over?
Yes.
Okay. Do we go past a game five, or is it over in five? It's at Golden State.
I think it's done.
Okay. Let's hope so, because I'm going to agree with a lot of people. I've seen more man part shots in this last two series than I, you know, care to remember. More ball handling going on than, you know, any other basketball series I've ever seen. So I've had enough of that, that's for sure. This is, you know, a great year for the Golden State Warriors. NBA record 73 wins, two-time MVP, who has not performed like an MVP in the finals. You know, who cares now? It's 3-1. We've had three blowouts in the NBA finals. Three out of the four games have been non-contests. So let's get this over with and move on to baseball. Tried to get Josh Tolleson on back on today, John. We were going to talk National League, which would have included your Cubbies. And he was out of town. He's actually at the stinking Braves game right now, the dog. But we'll have him on next week. Something caught my attention in the past week, John. The Cubs, fastest team to 40 wins in the last 15 years, correct?
That sounds right.
That's exactly the statement. Fastest team to 40 wins in the last 15 years. Wouldn't that mean they're leading the National League?
Yes.
Well, that same week, I thought somebody said the Giants or somebody else was in first place in the National League. It was like right around that same day, and I didn't understand that. I mean, first team, fastest team to 40 wins in 15 years, to me, they would be leading the entire Major League Baseball. Otherwise, somebody else would have already had 40 wins. So, yeah, I don't know about that.
They are six games up on San Francisco right now.
Yeah, I don't remember what it was, but it may have just been somebody talking and they were just incorrect, and I heard it and couldn't believe they were dumber than me. So, because that had to do with math, and I figured it out. But anyway, so we got baseball coming up, baseball season. I love Major League Baseball season, but not until after everything else is over. We do have some Saints stuff going on. We lost Kikaha to a knee injury. But we did sign another Kramer-esque player back to the team, Roman Harper, who had to have oxygen after being run down by a kicker one game. Drafted in 06, Sean Payton's first year with the Saints. Drafted in the second round out of Alabama, Roman Harper was. And was 50 two seasons later with gray hair. Don't know how that happened, but maybe he has Kramer syndrome. I don't know, but Kramer's going to have to get back at me for that, I'm sure. But I've known him a long time, and he's been old that whole time. So anyway, I'm just – this LHSAA thing, John Tabor, really has me baffled, and I'm really anxious to get Ricky Dirt on the phone because there's that part of me that I keep bringing up that says let them all play each other and, you know, beat them if you can. But I understand trying to limit those who don't have limits. But something's got to happen if all these people are unhappy with the LHSAA. Sponsors are waiting to see if they're going to donate money because of what's going to happen. It's almost, to me, from the outside, because I don't know the inside information that well, it's almost like we're trying to commit suicide. We're not caring. Let's focus on us. Let's not focus on the whole. But we're going to get back to that. We're going to go ahead and take another break. It should be time to get Brother Rick on the phone. So we're going to take another break. You're listening to Talkin' Sports here on ESPN 97.7 FM. Welcome back to the program, Talkin' Sports here on ESPN 97.7 FM. Just knowing what I'm about to talk about's already got my dander back up. Want to welcome Ruston High Principal Ricky Durrett to the show. Welcome in, Rick.
Thank you. Appreciate y'all having me.
Well, I know you were on the phone to hear that Pulpwood Producers commercial. Makes you proud that the borough's being represented, doesn't it?
Oh, it does. Glad to always hear Peter Bryan and Pulpwood Producers, Steven supporting us and all everything.
Absolutely. The borough's got to represent, man.
Exactly.
Ricky, tell me what the heck happened in the special session this week, man. What you know, did it go wrong in your opinion?
Well, I mean, I think it's been wrong since we voted to split in January. Kind of was hoping maybe we could let things settle down and from January to now and maybe come up with a compromise and we could all keep competing and playing together. But no, nothing came out of that except that we're going to stay split. And, you know, with 300 principals there and 56% of them voting for to continue splitting, then I guess that's the direction we'll go. I think it's I don't think it's a good direction. It's a dangerous direction for us. But we'll see what the next few months bring and next year brings for us, I guess.
All right, well, let's back up a little bit. I jumped the gun a little bit by asking you what happened first, but let's back up. You were part of this you were one of the authors of I believe, the first article that was voted on, correct?
Actually, ours was the second one. It was the second one.
Okay, the second one.
Yeah.
Tell us about that proposal and explain that to us.
Okay. Basically, we had a 6A proposal where we would add another classification and take the biggest 32 schools with the largest enrollment in the state and put them in a classification by themselves. especially by doing that, you bring the numbers together for every classification all the way down through 1A and to B and C a lot closer together, which, you know, in the beginning, while we classify, is to try to get schools of basically the same size that can compete against each other. Well, it's been the last several years in 5A, you've got schools all the way from 1,200 to 2,500 competing all against each other, and this proposal would have kind of split that up some and brought the numbers a lot closer together. But it also had a 1.5 multiplier in it. If you got more than 25% of your athletes from outside your attendance zone, then you multiplied your enrollment by 1.5, which is kind of something that we've seen done in Alabama. Arkansas does it, Tennessee does it, I think. There's probably some more that do it, but some are doing it and trying to kind of level the playing field for the schools that can get kids from outside attendance zones or really don't have an attendance zone, kind of level the playing field a little bit for them that are playing with us that do have an attendance zone. So that's kind of the gist of it.
Okay, now, even with that 1.5 multiplier, and this is for my clarification.
Sure.
I use Evangel all the time as my example because I know that, you know, it wasn't that long ago, but back in the day, so to speak, Evangel was the one that everybody got tired of winning against 5A schools. I'm not pointing fingers. I'm just saying that a lot of 5A schools got tired of losing to a 1A size Evangel.
Sure.
And so that's how a lot of this came about. I've heard too many stories, so.
Right.
So it's my understanding that even with the 1.5 multiplier, 6A would have kept most of those schools out of 6A.
No, not necessarily. Well, also another part of it, which I left out, if a school wanted to play up, then they had to play all the way up in all sports to 6A.
Okay.
So if an Evangel, for instance, they played up last year, they're in 5A, they could have played up all the way to 6A.
They would have had to play in all sports.
Right, they would have, yes. Or they could have stayed wherever their numbers fell and played in that classification. But anybody that wants to play up would play all the way up to 6A.
Okay, so there's no 1A to 2A. It's 1A to 6A or nothing.
Right, exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
See, that makes sense to me.
Right.
That does, because you want to play up, play up. If you don't, you play in your division.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. That's kind of what we thought with that. I mean, we had several things in there. I mean, I didn't just come up with it. I mean, a lot of people thought about it and put some things down together. I had a lot of other people that authored it in the beginning, just ended up with me in the end. But, you know, I really thought it might be something that we could work with and compromise, but wasn't to be right now in the LHSA.
Well, and give people a little bit more background. You're not just the principal at Ruston High, but you've been a principal – and Simsboro is what? I can't even remember. Is that B or C?
It's Class B. It is Class B, yeah.
Okay. And you've also coached, so you're not just, you know, an administrator looking at this from the outside.
Sure. I mean, I coached girls basketball for 20 years, part of that time at Simsboro, part at Russ and I. I was a principal for 6 years now, four of them at Simsboro and two of them at Russ and I. So, kind of been in the smallest school and in one of the larger schools. So, kind of been around it. I mean, I've lost to some private schools. I mean, we've lost to Dominican in the playoffs, Mount Carmel down in New Orleans, but, you know, we competed with them. There's been years where we beat those teams. I just don't know that putting people out, playing totally separate is the answer. I think I gave the example. There's a team, and, of course, football's been split for a couple of years. There's a football team. Naming names in the classification, it's been 0-30 the last 3 years, and they've made the playoffs every year, and they're 0-3, of course, in it.
Right.
Is that really what the playoffs is about? You know, I mean, I just think we're getting, if we stick with what we have, what's past, we're going to have 12 state championships, you know, in basketball, boys and girls, baseball, softball. We'll have 9 in football, and I think it's just, I think that's too many. I think we're getting watered down there.
We're getting, you know, I had mentioned this with Brett Hudson earlier from the New Star.
Sure.
You know, I saw on my Twitter feed somebody said Louisiana's now handing out participation trophies.
Right.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. Let's go to one other aspect because of your experience with both 5A and Class B. if the Class B and C had combined, that would not have been good for those classes, correct?
You know, I don't think it is right now. I mean, I think there's a point in time, maybe in the future, that it's going to be. They may need to be combined. I think in basketball especially, there's plenty of those schools playing right now. I think maybe when you get over into softball and track and baseball and some of the other sports, maybe they need to combine some. There's just not enough teams that compete in those. But that's, you know, I think at some point down the road they probably will combine, but that really needs to kind of be a decision they make and come to it. I just didn't feel like right now was time to address that down here in Baton Rouge, and that's kind of why we're not proposing we left B and C alone. But if we're going to pull out select and non-select, you know, I'm not sure that they have enough, really. I think you're going to end up with two different divisions down there, one for select, one for the pub non-select. So they may end up combining after all.
And many people that I've spoken with, that is, as well as myself, felt like the Class B and C proposal at this point was kind of making them the sacrificial lamb, saying, right, yes, we're increasing championships, but we'll cut out a few by taking some away from B and C.
Right, and it's important down there. No schools, just like every other community. I mean, there's a lot of community schools and have a lot of support in there, and they're kind of the thing that they got that pulls them all together in those small schools, kind of a rallying place for the town. And you know, I think it's important that they have their state championships too.
Absolutely. All right. Well, what's next? I mean, okay. No, I'm sorry. I did forget one question.
Okay.
Todd Geis was on with Nick and Aaron Wednesday morning before the meeting, and he talked about sponsorship money on hold, to the tune of $500,000, waiting to see what happens.
Right.
What have you heard about Superdome? You know, because the Saints and the NFL are not real thrilled with the two weekends that they're having to leave open, sponsorship money on hold, venues, all that type of stuff. What are you hearing right now about all of that?
Well, I mean, just talk about the sponsorship first. I mean, I know that, you know, the All-State Sugar Bowl sponsors All-State Championship kind of has is on hold, waiting to have a clause in there. If any further split of the LHSA, then they can pull out if they want to. I don't know if they are or not. I haven't heard. I know they've lost some other sponsorships already. Because it's a tough economy right now. I mean, so some of them have just chosen not to be involved in all this, and they're pulling out of it. So, yes, they are losing some money, and I think if we see the private schools kind of split off and go do their own thing, I think that's even more of it we're going to lose. I just don't think it's, you know, I mean, I think people want to be involved in something that includes everybody and pulls people together rather than pushing them apart and playing separately for championship honors like we're doing. And then as far as venues, I mean, I know Sulphur and several of those places, Lake Charles, I mean, I know they said they can't do two weekends. They're doing all they can with the volunteers and people they have, so I don't know if that means we're going to cut back to only state championships. No more semifinals, you know, in basketball. Maybe those will be played on your home floors, which I don't think people are going to be excited about. I think the great thing in that going here in Louisiana, too, is we were able to have the state championships all at one venue for people that love the sport just to go watch and see a lot of great games from the semifinals all the way to the final. It was a great experience for kids to be a part of and to play in the big arenas or in a big atmosphere in baseball and softball or the dome and football. And I know the dome's kind of said, you know, we're not sure we can keep doing the two weekends. So I don't know where it leads us with that. You know, I've heard some people say that's fine, we'll go play somewhere else. Well, we played up in Shreveport one year, you know, the football when the hurricane came through and stuff, and it's cold and wet outside and raining, and I just don't think that's sure. If you're going to play for a state championship, I'm sure they'll show up and do it. But
right,
sure, it'd be nice to give them the best atmosphere and the best place to play and try to have the best experience for kids to have and as they leave school and something they can remember and go back to. So, you know, just a lot of ramifications for all this that I don't think have been totally all thought out. And when everybody passes, I don't think they understand exactly how it's going to affect all that either yet. So we'll see.
Right. Well, to me, it's getting like Little League because right. now it's not. It's getting to where it's not about the kids. It's about the. It's about the money. It's about the schools. It's about the reputation and the pride. These kids right. need to get out there and play ball.
Well, I think Robin Fambro down at the Advocate wrote a great article earlier in the week. You know that if the adults all got out of the way and we just let the kids of the state and athletics vote, to wonder how they would vote. And you know, I'm not sure, but I kind of feel like they'd probably vote and say, "Let's just play. We just want to get out there and play and compete." So
absolutely. All right, well, Rick, thanks for coming on the show. I really appreciate it. I wanted to get your opinion on all this. I know you were heavily involved, so thanks for taking the time today.
I appreciate it, Byron, and y'all have a good day.
All right, you too, brother.
Thanks,
man. We'll take a break. When we come back, more Talking Sports, ESPN 97.7 FM. That's a song that'll put you in a good mood, Mr. Tabor, right there. Welcome back to the program, Talking Sports, ESPN 97.7 FM. Today it's just you and me, and I'm B, Byron Avery. Flying solo again today, DJ Davis, out at Fun Row Fest. Hoping to hear from him at some point before we close out the program. All the negatives that I've had in my head all day, they're gone. I'm over it. Hopefully. And one thing that'll do that for you is getting our next guest in studio, the battler, Sean Williams. Welcome back, sir.
Thanks for having me.
Anytime I can get somebody in the studio who's got more to complain about and doesn't than I do, then I might as well keep my mouth shut. So, welcome back.
Glad to be here.
A couple of things to talk about with you. Yesterday was an important day, and so is today in your life. Not with your life, but in your life. I guess you could probably tie them together, and they could all come together for you that way. But tell us about yesterday and today specifically, what we talked about.
Yeah, so 3 years ago yesterday, as a way to cope with the fact that I had just been diagnosed with colon cancer, I took the names of 36 of my friends and created a Facebook page and called it, because of a picture that I had seen on Facebook, I named it Who Dat Nation Redemption. And yesterday made 3 years that and we're up to, I think, probably close to 300 members now.
Awesome.
Yeah. And it actually worked because I haven't had a nervous breakdown yet.
And then today marks 2 years. I failed in my intro, though, to you know, most of you know who Sean is, but Sean Williams with Who Dat Nation Redemption and NFC South.
West.
NFC West, that's right. We're not, Saints are in the South. NFC West coordinator for ProFootballSpot.com. So today marks 2 years for
sure.
you.
Yes, it does. June the 11th of 2014 was my first day with ProFootballSpot.com. And I think at last count I have something like 900 submissions in 2 years.
That's awesome. That's a great job. So let's talk about your latest. You have a series called Legends of the Fall.
Yes.
Talking about football players, of course. And your latest is on the last Saint that we've lost in Will Smith.
Sure. Going back a little bit, this is the time of the year that football writers call the dead time. You're done with the draft. You're not quite to OTAs and training camp. So scratching and scrounging and having content is not always the easiest thing in the world. So last year, I came up with this idea for that I was wanting to use with some of my other writers at Pro Football Spot, where we go back into the history of each of our individual teams and sort of celebrate the guys that made these teams who they are. Like, you're, of course, with teams like, for example, say the 49ers, you'll have your Rices, your Montanas, your Youngs. But teams like New Orleans that doesn't have that rich history full of Super Bowl championships doesn't necessarily mean that there's not just as rich a history. And I wanted to come up with a way to celebrate those players and the ones that maybe not are as well known as your Willie Rofe, Ricky Jackson, Archie Manning. Last year I did several on, let's see, those guys that I just mentioned, Deuce McAllister, Sam Mills, Joe Horn, just from one end to the other. And as the season started, of course, I didn't want to take away from what was going on the field, so I backed off away from it. But with the reception that they got last year, I told myself and my people at PFS that it was something that I would really really like to entertain the idea of maybe bringing it back and doing it as a yearly thing during the dead time. And they were really receptive to it. And long story, not quite as long, started this year off Thursday, I believe, with the one on Will Smith.
Well, and you know, again, it's tragic when anybody dies. It was horrible the way he died. You know, news has come out. You know, I hate to hear that he was 3 times the legal limit driving when all this happened. But, you know, nonetheless, he's gone.
Sure.
Taken from us. Not taken from us. He's, we're fans of the football team. Taken from his family. And, you know, my lasting impression of Will Smith, the Super Bowl year, they were playing the Steelers. And Will Smith was not a little man.
No, he was quite large.
But when he jumped on Roethlisberger's back in that Steelers game, and Roethlisberger didn't go down, and Will Smith looked like a kid.
I remember that.
I'll never get that picture out of my head. That's, unfortunately, that's my lasting
memory. I think the
most
enduring, and I made reference to this in the article, my most enduring memory of Will Smith came during the Super Bowl that year on Tracy Porter's pick six. As the defenders turned around and started making their way to the end zone convoy style behind or in front of Porter, as it shook out, Will Smith ended up isolated on Peyton Manning. And he rolled him.
Good for him.
Well, it probably wasn't nearly as ugly as I know it could have been.
Absolutely.
And I think if it was in a basketball game, they would have probably called it a flop by Peyton. But I would tend to believe that discretion is the better part of valor if you're having to go up against Will Smith as a quarterback.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Play that little Olay thing there.
It would, to use big words, it kind of served as a microcosm of the entire game. Because when Smith dropped Peyton, New Orleans, in a matter of speaking, dropped the Colts and became world champions.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, what's next in the series?
Next week will be another one on Hoki Gaijon. And as of right now, the plan is to the series should run over a 2-month span, and It'll be phased out once again as training camp opens. And I'm looking to add some names, Hokie Gaijon, Henry Childs, and there's several others that I've got some people that I'm helping, or I have to help me make the call on who goes and who doesn't. But there's some interesting names on there that you may not have heard for a while, players like Dalton Hilliard, Sammy Knight, Jerry Fontenot, Kyle Turley, guys like that. It's a lot of fun to do it, and you're generating some excitement during a time when there's really not a whole lot going on. And at the same time, you know, I pride myself on being kind of a student of history, whether that be American history, war history. But I'm such a sports fanatic that I really enjoy the history of the sport too. And you're exposing some of the younger people to guys that they may not be all that familiar with, and that pushes them to want to look back into what brought the team to the point that it's at now.
I'm waiting for the one on Russell Erksleben.
So. Oh, I think that may be more than Google could power.
All right, so tell us about what you wrote about. First, tell us how we can find the article, and then tell us what you wrote about Will Smith.
Okay, you can go to profootballspot.com and go into the New Orleans Saints forum, and you should be able to find it there. The name of it is New Orleans Saints Legends of the Fall, Will Smith. And if you dig a little bit, we weren't able at the last minute to add the links to the prior ones from last year on this one, but anyone that would be interested in seeing the ones from last year, just get in touch with me, and I can give you the link to one, and the links to all the others are added at the end of those articles.
All right, so tell us about this one.
Okay, Will Smith was I'm gotta check my notes. He was the 18th overall pick for the Saints in 2004, I believe, and he came from Ohio State. And he was a four-year letterman with the Buckeyes, and I believe it was 2002 he was on the BCS National Championship team with Ohio State. And his first 2 years in the league, he was just kind of a situational rotation player. And after 2 years, they made him a full-time starter. And in his first four seasons, he registered 33.5 sacks in four seasons. Mm. And as he's coming into his own, all the planets sort of aligned there for not only Will Smith, but for the Saints as well. And depending on how you look at it, most people have a really skewed view of Greg Williams coming to town as the defensive coordinator. But, you know, despite what you think about him, he is very effective as a defensive coordinator. I didn't care for the guy, and I certainly have a bad taste in my mouth with what he left when he snuck out of town and went to St. Louis. But, you know, it's all said and done now. But he was, he played a major role in what became known as Bounty Gate.
Oh, absolutely.
And Will Smith was one of the, I think, four players that was suspended by Roger Goodell from Bounty Gate. They appealed the process of the suspensions through former Commissioner Paul Tagliabue, and in the process of their appeals, they were allowed to keep playing. So, long story short, Smith, Vilma, Grant, and Fujita, those were the four guys. None of them ever served any of the suspensions that came along. Now, the Saints lost a second-round draft pick, I believe. And, of course, Sean Payton was the only time in history that a head coach has been suspended for an entire year.
Yeah, that was – you know, here's my deal. You know, I that's when I first joined Twitter was during that time. And I remember, you know, going on there and voicing my opinions and, you know, people talking about, oh, well, you're just – because you're a Saints fan. Well, I said, look, you know, I mean, it's ridiculous. All teams are doing it. I'm sorry.
Absolutely.
But the Saints were told to stop, and they didn't. So it is their fault. I don't have a – you were punished. It's done. Move on. You lost – we lost that season. But stop being arrogant. When the commissioner of the NFL tells you to do something, do it. You know, so, I'm over it. We all should be over it. It happens.
Personally, my view on the whole Bountygate thing was, as you just said, they weren't doing anything that every other team in the league, and every contract that's handed out to players in the league is loaded down with incentives. Now, there were no players that were hurt. Now, Brett Favre got beat up pretty good.
Yeah, he got beat up. That's all. He didn't get injured.
How many times in that NFC Championship game did you see them throw a flag for unnecessary roughness?
Right.
They did it within the confines, in my opinion, they did it within the confines of the rules and regulations. We were one of the, I consider that my team. The Saints were one of the least penalized teams in those such penalties that year. And the defense was outstanding. They scored nearly as many points as Drew Brees and the offense did.
Well, let's not get carried away.
Well, that's an exaggeration, obviously. But Sharper had, three, four pick sixes in the first four weeks of the season.
And I don't know how, with all the other stuff he had obviously had on his mind. So
I don't know how he, from what developed in his portfolio since then, I don't know how he had the strength to do it, but
yeah, that's
another story for another time, I guess.
We've got Sean Williams on the show with us right now from Houdat Nation Redemption and Pro Football Spot. We are brought to you this hour by the Riverport Creative Group, riverportcreativegroup.com. We are presented, as always, by DBAT of Monroe. DBAT for all your baseball and softball training needs. This segment is brought to you by the Greg Phillips State Farm Insurance Agency in Ruston. Greg Phillips is a good neighbor. I can promise you that. Well, Sean, we lost Kikaha.
Yes.
He's gone for the season. Who's going to replace him?
I think the odds-on favorite at this point would probably be Kasim Edebali. And you have other players. I struggle with this guy's name. Guachum.
Yeah.
I think so. How you say it. But you got Davis Toll, who was a draft pick last year and wasn't able to play due to injury. So he's basically kind of a rookie again.
All right. Well, look, we're going to cut away. We've got our What's Up segment coming next. We're going to take just a short break, and we'll get back. We'll be right back, guys, with Larry Wright. Talking Sports, ESPN 97.7 FM. Welcome back to the program. Talking Sports, ESPN 97.7 FM. Byron Avery, your host here today. DJ is going to check in with us. I did hear from him. He's going to check in with us following this segment. On the phone right now, don't confuse him with senior, but it's junior, Larry Wright, joining us. Welcome to the show, Larry.
Thanks a lot, Byron. How are you?
I'm good, man. I'm good. Great to talk to you. Great to hear from you. This is our What's Up segment, so we're going to find out what's up with Larry Wright. Larry, a lot of people are going to remember you from the area. Washtenaw High School ended up at West Monroe on their first state championship team with my co-host, DJ Davis. Then a lot happened to you after that. Tell us, you know, let's not get into the little transfer or whatever. You know, we don't want to go there for whatever reason. I'm not, you know, anyway, you ended up at West Monroe for Don Shiles. Tell us what that was like playing on West Monroe's first state championship team.
Wow. Going back to that time in my life, playing at West Monroe at that time, you know, I think back over the things that have occurred athletically, and, you know, it still ranks up there as one of the best things to ever happen. And not just because we won the state championship, but just all that went into that state championship. You know, Coach Giles came to West Monroe when I was actually in the seventh grade, when I was at West Monroe Junior High, and he had a vision for the program. He had a vision for the community. So to be a part on the tail end of what he started building, like I said, all that went into that team, you know, we weren't the most talented team. When you look at the teams in our district, the teams that we played against in the playoffs, the team that we ended up beating in the state championship, you know, we weren't the most talented team on the field. We weren't the biggest team on the field. And we didn't have the most team speed from top to bottom. But when you look at that team, we were the team that had the biggest heart. You know, we had guys that we weren't going to be outworked by anybody. You know, you had guys that were going to fight for one another. You had guys that depended on one another. And, you know, when I look back at that, that was basically the foundation of what West Monroe was to become. And, you know, just the fulfillment of the vision of Coach Shiles coming to West Monroe, and that kind of helped galvanize the community. And just to look back at that and to know that you were a part of that is something big in my life.
Absolutely. That was a big deal. It was a big deal, like you said, for the community and for those players. I know that Coach Shiles, when he came in, I talked to a guy who played before you, several years before you, and he was there with Shiles, and they Shiles showed off his ring. He said, 4 years, guys, because he had won a championship in Pineville.
That's right.
4 years. 4 years you guys are going to have a chance to win one of these, and they laughed.
Right.
And he said they ran gassers the rest of the day.
Right, for
laughing at that thought.
Right.
But then something big happened for you after that. You went to kind of a small school everybody's heard of, Notre Dame.
I did. And, you know, that was something that kind of came out of nowhere because I was being recruited. And a lot of schools recruited me, but mainly in the regional area. I took visits to Tulane, LSU, Southern Miss. I went over to Grambling, Louisiana Tech. And so I was being recruited, you know, regionally, but other schools and other places knew about me. And Notre Dame came in the picture. And, you know, it was just one of those places when I went on my visit, I was kind of awestruck, you know, because you know about the tradition of Notre Dame, and getting the chance to meet Lou Holtz as a first-class program. And then when you go on the campus, you know it's a campus that's going to nurture students and allow student athletes to progress and become good students as well as athletes. So I got on the plane coming back. I discussed it with my family, and we just thought that was the best place for me at the time.
Well, I mean, you know, you've got Touchdown Jesus there welcoming you with open arms. How can you say no, right?
That's right.
So you went to Notre Dame, but you ended up at Tech. Tell us a little bit about what went into that decision.
Well, during that time, it was kind of a transition in our family, and I just felt that it was best that I be closer to home, and Tech gave me the opportunity to be a part of a program that I thought highly of, you know, growing up from a little kid. So when they opened their arms back to me coming back from Notre Dame, when I decided to come back closer to home, you know, it just wasn't any thinking twice about it.
Okay. A lot of fun times at Tech. You got to see some high-powered offense, that's for sure.
Right.
I know you played with Troy Edwards and Otis Pitts and all those guys. We talked about that yesterday.
Right.
Just talk about your time at Tech and what that meant to you and how that helped you develop into what you're doing today.
Well, one thing for certain, I saw that with Croton, you know, the diligence that he put into building that offense,
And I actually, when I came back to Tech, I was coming back as a running back. And when you transfer like I did, you have to sit out a year. So I sat out. I was doing scout team things at running back, and I was also playing receiver as well. And Coach Clayton said he wanted some more speed on offense, so I changed from running back to receiver once I came through that transfer year. And making that transition, it just made me realize that you have to work hard to do different things, be versatile, and you got to be ready to be a team player and just do things to help your team win and be as positive as you can in the situation. Played 2 years at receiver, then I ended up playing safety my senior year, which, you know, we thought that was the best way I could help the team.
Okay, and then you graduate. You finish school. Your playing career is over. What happened next?
Right, well, as with any player, you have that transition. Coming from an athletic family like I did, you know, I was a basketball player first, so I thought. So I was going to play a professional sport some kind of way. First, I thought it was going to be basketball. And then as I go through school, football is my calling. And you go through that in my college career. The NFL didn't call for me, so I have to go through that transition. And the one thing that my parents always stressed was getting an education, making sure you do what you have to do to get that piece of paper, and you can always fall back on it, you know, if your professional career don't take off. And you don't understand that when you're young, because, hey, I'm a superstar, I'm going to make it, so I think in my mind. But
right.
I listened. And before I finished my college career, I graduated from Louisiana Tech in sociology with a minor in psych. So when I made that transition, I had my paper to fall back on. And I had a couple of odd and end jobs. The first, I worked at Rite Aid in Ruston. And the one thing I totally believe is that the Lord has always had order for my life. He's ordered my steps. And he put me in places where I may not have understood it at the time, but it's always been a reason for it. I went to work at the Methodist Children's Home. And to this day, that's one of the best jobs that I think I've ever had. And because it helped me in that transition from not making it to the NFL and kind of being a little down. But I was able to see other people whose lives weren't perfect. And it helped give me perspective at a young age. So I worked at the Methodist Children's Home, and then from there, I got in grad school at Grambling. I got a master's in sports administration in Grambling in 2001, where I also coached as a grad assistant under Coach Williams, and I coached the running backs at Grambling. From there, I just thought that really gave me a foundation to move on in life, and after I coached at Grambling, I accepted a position as a head coach at Reno High School in 2001, where I was there for two seasons. I also coached basketball while I was there. And in the meantime, I did a training camp internship with the Baltimore Ravens. And that was kind of my initial foot in the door in terms of my NFL life. And did two seasons at Reno. And in January 2003, I accepted a position with the Baltimore Ravens as a scouting assistant. But James Harris, who gave me that opportunity, accepted a position as a vice president of player personnel with the Jacksonville Jaguars. And in the meantime, all of my belongings, everything I owned in my life, was on its way to Baltimore. He asked me and offered me a position, and I went to Jacksonville. So we had to kind of rearrange things and get all my stuff to Jacksonville. And I signed in Jacksonville in February of 2003, and I stayed there for 6 years. For 6 years, I was there as a scouting assistant first and then pro-scout. And I ended up as assistant director of pro-personnel. And in 2009, they made changes to the staff. I was part of those changes. And like I said earlier, the Lord has ordered my life, and even though, you know, that was one of those things, I was in between jobs, I had the opportunity to come back home to West Monroe to kind of regroup or what have you. And I was looking for a place for my two youngest kids, Lauren and Larry Glenn, to go to the daycare while I was back in West Monroe. And I saw Coach Arledge walk across the field and, you know, just ask me what I was doing back in West Monroe. I kind of explained to him what was going on. And, you know, he went back and talked to Coach Giles, and Coach Giles called me immediately. And in 2009, they gave me an opportunity to come and coach at West Monroe while I was back home. And 2009, coached at West Monroe, and that was one of the best experiences professionally in my life, because it gave me a chance to get back home. I coached a great group of guys in West Monroe. Young men I still have relationships today. We won a state championship at West Monroe that year. And during that year, during that time in the transition, it really ranked up there with that high school state championship to be able to accomplish that coming back home. So in 2009, finished that. And in 2010, in May of 2010, I was offered a position with the Houston Texans as a pro scout. And I've been here ever since.
That's an amazing journey, Larry. Right. I didn't realize you had come back. I'd forgotten that you came back and coached at West Monroe. So you were able to be part of two state championships with West Monroe High School.
Right.
I know that was special for you, but tell us just a little bit. First, let's back up. I started off the segment by saying let's not confuse senior and junior.
Right.
A lot of people may not know what I meant by that, but your dad, pretty well known, Larry Wright Sr.,
right,
played basketball in the NBA and was a scout in the NBA for a long time.
Right, right. And, you know, just to add to his story a little bit, he, you know, played at Richwood High School, played at Grambling State University, and was the head basketball coach at Grambling. Played the Bullets, played the Detroit Pistons, and played in Italy. And, you know, I was fortunate and blessed. You know, when I used to go to school, you know, kids used to talk about Magic Johnson being their hero or Dr. J being a hero. And I used to wake up in the morning, and my hero, my sports figure was in the house with me. So that was something that I was always proud of and, you know, kind of stuck my chest out a little bit because of it.
Absolutely. And he had a few well-known teammates at Richwood. One that a lot of people remember is a Mr. Sammy White.
That's
1974
right.
1974 Minnesota Vikings NFL Rookie of the Year.
That's right.
Played in the Super Bowl that year, and my enduring image of Sammy White is catching that ball across the middle and his helmet popping off and him getting back up from that hit. So
That's exactly right. And growing up, you know, just Sammy White, you know, I grew up in a household that had guys come through like Sammy White, James Harris, who I've, you know, worked for 6 years and got my first opportunity in the NFL with, Rip Reed that played quarterback at Grambling, Charles Smith that played receiver, we call him Tank, that coached at Wiseman High School. Dallas Howell was my first coach in every sport I played growing up, and he was a cornerback from Grambling State, played with the Jets, played with the Saints. So, you know, being a part of that type of atmosphere, you know, bred being around sports for the rest of my life some kind of way. So, like I said, my life has been ordered for a reason, and, you know, being in sports like I am, you know, it's for a reason.
Okay. Well, let me ask you a question. We're getting ready. We've got OTAs getting cranked up. We got camp coming up. What is your role in all this now as a scout?
Okay, so I work in pro personnel, and, you know, a lot of times people, you know, hear NFL scout and they think about the guys that on the college campuses going to the college games. And I actually do some of that, but my primary role is as a pro scout. And what our part of the department does, we focus on all of the players, we're no longer college eligible and still pursuing the game, right? So we work on grading the NFL, grading all the rosters in the NFL, all the players in the NFL, grading CFL arena, and then any other league that have prospective players. Now, for us in OTAs, to answer your question, we also are charged with evaluating our roster. So as we have our players go out to practice, we go out to practice, we assign positions, we take notes at practice, see what's going on, get a feel for how the depth chart is rounding out, making sure that young guys are progressing, who's winning position battles, and then as we go through the process, you know, we'll eventually meet, talk about our different positions, and just kind of get with our GM and give him the information that we're gathering in practice, and he'll have that information, and he'll get the information from the coaches how they see the team, and all of that information is put together, and then you just go with putting the positions in order and fielding a club leading into training camp.
Okay. Well, I know you've got a big responsibility with all that. I've got 1 minute, and I've got two questions.
Okay.
Number one, what did as a pro personnel guy, did you know about the guy from Germany, and is he legit?
We did know about the guy from Germany, just from stats.
I don't remember his name or anything.
Yeah, and if I did remember his name, it's one of those names that if it's not written down in front of you, it's hard to pronounce.
Right.
So I won't try to do that. We did know about him, and athletically, he is legit in terms of physical skill, size, jumping ability, length, and all of those physical attributes you look for in a player. The one thing that you have to just always be concerned about with guys who hadn't played football from, you know, 6, 7, 8 on up is just the instincts of the game is how well will he transform from the speed of the game and put it into the speed of the game in the NFL.
Well, he's going to have his chance to find out. And my second question and last question for you, Larry, is J.J. Watt as big and bad as he seems?
J.J. Watt is as big and bad as he seems and more. and that's just the honest truth because, you know, we had the show Hard Knocks last year, and, you know, they followed him around on camera. And he caught a lot on camera, but it was a lot that they didn't catch on camera in terms of how hard he works.
That's what I like to hear, is how hard they work. They can talk and do all that other, all they want, as long as they work hard.
Right.
And Larry, with that, I'm going to have to let you go, but I can't thank you enough for joining us this week. I'm so glad to hear you're doing well and all the things that have gone on with you. Life has its meaning and things happen, but glad to hear you're in a great place. And let's not forget about them Bulldogs.
Hey, will not. I appreciate the opportunity. I thank you for thinking of me. Tell BJ I say what's up, and best of health to you.
All right. Larry, thanks again. That's Larry Wright, pro personnel with the Houston Texans. We'll be back right after this message. Talking Sports, ESPN, 97.7 FM. Welcome back to the program. Talking Sports, ESPN 97.7 FM. Larry Wright, just got finished talking with our old friend Larry Wright from West Monroe, Notre Dame, Louisiana Tech, now with the Houston Texans in their pro personnel department. Really good to hear that he's doing well. Now it's time to have a little fun, because I need some. It's been a hard day. You know, this whole hour and 47 minutes that I've been here. We've got Chris Brown from Two Dudes Radio and Two Dudes Catering, the Two Dudes Radio podcast. Him and Kevo, they just get on there and they have a good time. They're so well thought out and planned. As Chris told me, they aren't. And, Chris, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you very much for having me. I appreciate it.
Tell us how Two Dudes got started and what you guys are up to.
Well, you know, it's kind of one of those things where it's just like every other great idea that most men have. You're sitting around and you probably had one or two and you said, you know, we're watching these guys on TV. We could do that. People would be, willing to listen to us. Well, lo and behold, here we are. And we said, let's start a podcast. So we did. And it's been a crazy ride because from there, you know, Kevo is probably the greatest partner that anybody could ever have simply because he's more passionate. He can get passionate about anything, but when he finds those things that really light him up, that man runs with it. And I respect him for that because I can only have just a, you know, my passion level is, 6 foot. His is like 27 foot. Kevo is, I mean, he really hammers it home. So he helps that show more than anybody that I could have ever chosen or he could have ever chosen to be right there with him. We just like to have a good time, man. We talk about everything under the sun. Our show is, we talk a lot of sports. We talk a lot of things. But if you're a man, you probably enjoy it. If you're a lady, sorry, ladies. I apologize.
it's kind of like what Fox says about when people ask the demographics of our shows. They're sports fans. And yours are sports fans and mainly just guys who are fans of sitting around talking with guys.
Pretty much. You know, we enjoy any time we can interact with a female listener because we do have a couple of ladies that tune in on a regular basis. We do we have recordings on Saturday nights usually. We do them live on Periscope. We post them on iTunes. And we've got young ladies that will join in with us, and they have actually got better opinions about some of the things that we're discussing than either one of us could come up with. And it's not fair because we don't have the ability to make those kind of arguments. We just can't do it.
Yeah, the last guy that won an argument with a woman, yeah, we don't know who that was.
Do we have a research department here that could answer that for us? It's going to take them a while.
If we did, they wouldn't be here. They'd be making a lot more money than that. But so give us some of the topics, give us some of the shows, and if you want, give us the things you stay away from that you told me
Absolutely.
About.
We will cover just about anything under the sun. There are only a few things that are off limits for Two Dudes. That's politics and religion, simply because we don't really want to get into all of that quote-unquote real-life stuff because everybody's got an opinion on that, and everybody's is different. We shy away from talking about anything that has to do with any type of lives matter because our opinion is all lives matter, blue, black, white, red, indifferent. All lives matter to us. And then the last thing is, we just had a huge segment on Baylor, and we tied Penn State into it. We don't believe in – if you are a man who's got an issue with domestics or anything like that, children, women – anywhere in between, Two Dudes has got a problem with you.
Yeah.
So that's pretty much the only things that are off limits. Things that are on limits, that includes sports, barbecue, the nice taste of an adult beverage, or anything in between. Anything that could be lit on fire or enjoyed, that's what we like to talk about.
Well, that's kind of the man's dream gig, isn't it?
That's what we'd like to think about it, at least.
Yeah, I want to shoot something, watch something blow up, and play a little ball and watch a little ball.
And eat good.
And eat good.
Don't forget about that.
Always. Which leads us to the other endeavor, Two Dudes Catering. Tell us about that.
Absolutely. So we sat down, and again, Kevo and I, we've got a lot of great ideas, and this one was a passion project that we ultimately want to see take off and really develop into something that's more than what it is. Right now we've got Two Dudes Catering. And I can personally attest, because I like to eat, if you can't tell from my stature here, that we make some of the best barbecue around the planet. And that's we call it award-winning because we gave ourselves an award.
Absolutely.
No, I'm only kidding. We've been very fortunate to be a part of the great community here in Monroe. We've done some work with our friends in Franklin Parish, and they have really accepted us. You know, the food truck movement in this area is something new. Mm-hmm. It's something fresh, and we were fortunate enough to stumble on a truck and a lot of hard work and passion, and I can't say anything else except great volunteers, because we're a startup and we've got great staff / volunteers. When we can get to that point, they will definitely be huge parts of Two Dudes Catering. But we specialize in barbecue, and we do you know, catering, food truck, the whole nine yards. The team right now is actually sitting out in the parking lot at Happy Days Car Wash on Louisville. Mm-hmm. There's a shameless plug for Cody at Happy Days.
Absolutely.
And he can go out there and anybody can meet Kevo and get yourselves a tasty lunch. If you decide to go out and get your car washed, come on out tonight after you've got that cleaned up ride and see our friends over at Live Oaks, where the Two Dudes truck will be parked serving up some deliciousness.
And I can smell what you brought with you, but unfortunately it's not barbecue. Yeah. So we're going to have to take part in that. I know that early on in our show you were listening. I know you guys are involved with autism.
We are.
And we have not gotten away from, but we haven't hit back on our purple movement with the Alzheimer's awareness. But I know that you guys were quick to jump in and say that whenever the purple movement does get legs and we have some events, you guys are right there with us.
Absolutely. Our philosophy is we have been very blessed as individuals to be able to be in a position to give back. And there are things that really hit home for us. Working with autistic children, working with, you know, Alzheimer's patients, working with anybody that I want to say is more fortunate than us, because people that are in those positions really appreciate life. Regular everyday guys, they don't always they're not cognizant enough to say, hey, you know, I've got it really good. Mm-hmm. But people that are in certain positions, they really understand what makes quality of life quality of life.
Absolutely.
And so any way that Two Dudes can help support and give back to some of that, every single time we're interested.
Well, and you're from the community, so when you talk about giving back, you mean it.
Absolutely.
You were telling me a while ago that you're a 2004 West Monroe grad.
I am, born and raised here in the great city of West Monroe.
And love to give back. Tell us, you know, Two Dudes mm-hmm. is part of a bigger project. You've got Two Dudes Radio, you've got Two Dudes Catering, that's all part of.
The parent company is 2D Enterprises. We do radio, which is the entertainment portion. We do the food truck and the catering, which is the, you know, service and food portion there.
Which is entertaining.
Absolutely. And if it's not, then it wasn't from us. And then the other piece is we also have a hand in, you know, workplace, training, safety, development, heavy machinery, things like that. We haven't exactly coined that one yet. We'll probably call it Two Dudes Fill in the Blank.
There you go. Two Dudes Training something.
Yeah, absolutely.
So how can we keep up with you?
Well, you can find us all over all of the socials. You can visit us online, www.twodudesradio.com and twodudescatering.com. On Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, whatever the next famous social media will be in 20 minutes, the number 2 Dudes Radio and number 2 Dudes Catering, no spaces. We're out there posting pictures of barbecue and radio shows and all kind of stuff that you should all be involved with.
Well, when it comes to adult beverages,
mm-hmm.
when it comes to barbecue,
mm-hmm.
and talking about things guys like to talk about,
mm-hmm. we're an amateur authority on all of those.
I like to say all of my experiences have made me an expert in absolutely nothing, but I think I could offer some pretty expert opinions on all three of those.
Well, I can tell you, we are always looking for good people. So we may just have to take you up on that offer. We had an event this past week, and it was actually on workplace safety. And afterwards, we got involved in a lovely discussion about a few of those topics. And that's where we really shine. You know, we can really put on a good show on the radio and, you know, about some of the other things. But when it comes down to cooking and enjoying the things that are associated with cooking, we're your guys.
Well, if you look at the brace that's sitting on my car dash right now, workplace safety is not something I would want to offer advice in right now, but the rest of it, I'm down.
Absolutely, we can definitely make that happen.
I'm down. So we're going to get together to do whatever, but when it comes to the autism events, I've got a good friend that you probably know, I won't mention his name on the air, we'll talk about that in a minute, that I'm all in for. And then with the Alzheimer's movement, I've got plenty. My mom's suffering from it. Plenty of parents are, plenty of friends are. Everybody probably knows somebody who's affected by it. It affects us all. So anything that we can do together to promote some awareness, do some of this. We've got our good friend Sean Williams, Mr. Cancer Survivor, sitting over there. So, again, when you talk about things to get up and down about, I don't really have a lot to complain about when he's sitting in here. So,
I understand that completely.
Chris, appreciate you coming in. Sean, thanks for being here today. Thanks to all our other guests, Larry Wright, Ricky Durrett, Brett Hudson from the New Star, thank you so much to John Tabor for taking care of us back at the HQ. We're here at the Coldwell Banker Group 1 Realty Studios. Thanks to our broadcast partners, Jeremy Hilton, Shield of Shelter Insurance, DBAT of Monroe, DBAT for all your baseball and softball training needs, DBATMonroe.com, Riverport Creative Group, Gina Wilbanks. She's Gina Usen. Gina Wilson Eubanks. So she's not Gina Wilbanks or Usen, but Gina Eubanks, agency owner with Allstate since 1995. Car King and Pulper Producers Hotline and Text Line, 888-993-7762. Next week, it's your turn to participate in the show. DJ will be back. He's probably going to be upset with me. He texted that he could talk after Larry Wright, but we got busy. That's what he gets for missing out. So thank you to all of you for listening. Thanks again, Mr. Tabor, for keeping us between the white lines. Until next week, this has been Talkin' Sports, ESPN 97.7 FM.
Thanks for listening to the best of Talkin' Sports with Byron. To listen to the show live, tune in every Saturday to ESPN977.com. Or subscribe to the show in iTunes, on Stitcher, or at RedPeachSports.com.